It has been a very good 12 months or so for our latest guest on Soundtrackin', producer Emma Tillinger-Koskoff. In addition to her work on the well-received Uncut Gems and The Souvenir, Emma has also had mainstream success with Joker and The Irishman, which saw her continue a long-standing partnership with none other than Martin Scorsese. Plenty more on that shortly. First, a quick question. Do you like to keep up to date with all things technology? The web, gadgets, your laptop, then how about trying Computer Active, the UK's best-selling fortnightly computer magazine? Now, I have to admit I'm a bit of a tech head, but one that doesn't really understand or enjoy all the complicated jargon that comes with it. That's why I've really enjoyed the variety and the tone of the articles, advice and information that comes with Computer Active, from how to protect your data to the best antivirus software. It's a fantastic way of staying up to date and helping me get the very best out of my various bits of technology. And for being a listener of Soundtrackin', we have a very special offer for you, whether you prefer digital or a print version. Subscribe now and you get 3 issues for £1, along with a 15-piece PC repair toolkit as a welcome gift. After that, every issue will be hand-delivered every fortnight at no extra cost. And if at any time you want to cancel, you will be refunded any unmailed issues. So, to get your first 3 issues in print and digitally for £1, plus the added bonus of a free PC repair kit, head to getcomputeractive.co.uk/soundtrackin'. That's getcomputeractive.co.uk/soundtrackin'. And so to Emma, The Irishman and Joker, which of course was scored by our former guest, Hilda Goodnottier. So it's with one of Hilda's cues from the film that we begin. Arthur Comes to Sophie. I'm so glad we got this to happen,
me
Emma.
Me too.
So glad.
Thank you, Edith. Thank you.
My pleasure. I mean, I tell you what, if there's women, girls out there who are thinking, I really want to get into film and I really want it, you're such a great inspiration, I think, for just look what you can do and look who you can work with and look what you can produce through hard work and a love of film.
Oh, true.
What a year you've had.
Yeah,
holy,
I mean, I...
crap.
Yeah.
Well, been, I mean, what an amazing, like, you know...
This year has been incredible. It certainly has. Not quite sure how I got there, but I think I was one of the few people to be very I was one of the few people holding on for dear life to 2019. not looking forward to it to the new year. 2019, 2020, dream come true. But I've worked really, really hard. Yeah. Really, really hard. I'm extremely lucky that I've worked with wildly talented filmmakers, so you know, I stand on all of their shoulders, really. But I started out of high school. I didn't go to college. I just knew that I wanted to do something in entertainment. Mm-hmm. And I just really started working in any department that I could PA, you know, get a PA job in. And one of my first film jobs was here, actually, in London. I came and worked on Louis Malle's film Damage.
Oh, wow.
And I was the set PA in the assistant director department. And I got to work very closely with the assistant directors and Louis. And I knew immediately that that is where I wanted to be. And I wanted to work closely with the director. So that's really when I first realized that's what I want to be doing.
When you know, with this year with Joker, with The Irishman, but then also your involvement in Uncut Gems and The Souvenir as well, you know, that's an amazing collection of films and throwing your weight and support to those smaller films as well as being part of these huge, wonderful productions that I've seen. So much success just in terms of the recognition from film fans, not, you know, putting the awards to one side, sure, sort of thing. But for you, in terms of when you're working on a project, or for example, someone like Todd phones you up and go, hey, I want you to come and work on Joker. What's the catch? What's the thing that grabs you and hooks you in?
Well, I read a script a couple of years ago, and Todd and I had met. And prior to me reading the Joker script and hit it off, and just he's somebody who he's very charming. He's incredibly erudite, wildly talented, and just a great guy. So I fell in love with him upon meeting him. And then Marty and I were going to produce Joker together and partner with Todd and produce it as a company for a million reasons, mainly schedule. Marty had to pull out. Todd asked if I'd be able to stay on and produce it with him. Mm-hmm. The film's being shot in New York. Obviously, I was had just finished Irishman. Irishman was posting in New York. So it all was sort of a perfect storm of scheduling that worked out brilliantly. So aside from being a huge Todd Phillips fan, the script was so incredible. It's one of the best scripts I've read in my career, period.
Wow.
The end. And comic book genre is not really my thing. I don't dislike it. It's not my thing. So I never really knew a lot about the Joker character. And I wanted to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Through the shoot, you know, to really sort of, so I had a real objective point of view on what we were doing. But yeah, no, I was drawn to obviously Todd, the script, Joaquin, you know, the whole package. It was a dream come true, impossible to say no to.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I think he's probably bored of the sight of me now because I've done so many Q&As with him over this award season. But I find something different to talk to him about this film every time. And it's the same when you watch it. You
totally
get a different experience, or you find something new within it. It's so nuanced and layered.
Yep.
And it's such a clever production.
Yep.
The music plays such an important part in the whole story of that film, in terms of that history of Hilda and her reacting to the script, you know,
yes,
physically with her cello and that music. Were you involved in that process at all, privy to any of that, or how involved do you get in that side of things?
Not so involved. You know, Todd had was determined to have Hilda.
Yeah.
I feel like Hilda came a little bit before I came on board. Yeah, and she did. She had this visceral reaction to it and had sent Todd music, just here's some thoughts and of initial thoughts from the script. And that's what's in the movie. you know, those relationships and those partnerships are so intimate, and so it's really the artist, the director, and the composer. So, you know, again, that's really Todd's domain and his space to work with Hildur. So, you know, I'm excited to hear what comes out of that, and there to help facilitate anything I can for them.
But amazing to think that kind of full circle as well of how playing that music on set while shooting and Joaquin's react, you know, and almost helping him inform how he finds elements of that character or those characters. Yeah.
100%. You know, that beautiful bathroom ballet, you know, you know, you really, you know, you know what's on the page, you know what you're shooting every day, but really when you have, you know, an extraordinary actor in, you know, that is Joaquin Phoenix, you never quite know what's going to show up on the day, right? So I'll never forget, I was in the trailer or whatever, I came onto set and there the music was going and there was the ballet dance happening, and I did an about face and quietly sort of, you know, scampered away and back to the trailer because I was so, I could not quite believe what I was seeing, and I felt like I had almost intruded, and I wanted to just get out and let them continue. It was that moving. It was that visceral of a reaction for me too. It was amazing.
I mean, the way that Marty works with music is extraordinary. And I was listening on the way here to the score for Silence.
Which,
talk about crafting the sound specifically. So he does that great, but then also the way that he uses needle drops as well is kind of historic. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
But can we go back a bit before we talk about Irishman and just how you started working with Marty? And
of course.
Was the Departed the first bit?
Yeah. So Departed was my first producing credit, my associate producer on the film. I had started working with Marty in 2002 as his assistant towards this award circuit bit of Gangs of New York. And then I did Aviator with him. And then I got promoted in I think it was 2006, right around the Departed time. Yeah. So I'd been working for, you know, years and years, and I had been working for Ted Demme before he passed away, and I'd been on sort of a producer trajectory, but I wanted to pull back the reins a little bit after he passed away and just go back to an assistant job where I felt more comfortable. And I needed that mentor that Marty is, and somebody to really sort of wrap their arms around me and help me and really mentor me, which Marty did. So, yeah, that's how we...
It's so lovely because this time last year I sat with Thelma and spoke to her for the podcast when she was here to pick up her, just before she picked up her fellowship.
Sure.
And she said exactly the same thing, you know, when she was starting out, and he really fought her corner and really kind of... You know, that apparently, you know, she needed to be kind of part of the union and things and all that kind of held up her working with him. But he kind of really fought her court. And when he finds these people that he wants to work with and form relationships with creatively, his commitment is sounds like it's just extraordinary. But what an amazing opportunity and mentor to have.
Yeah, yeah. You know? No. I mean, I feel like I always joke, but it's not a joke. I have the greatest gig in town. I mean, I have the best job in the world. I'm the luckiest person, producer.
That's because you're good at your job as well. You know,
I'm starting to overcome just a little bit of my imposter syndrome and can kind of pat myself on the back. Really, ever since Silence, you know, Silence was really the film that I proved to myself that I could really produce a film. Marty's incredibly demanding. He commands perfection across the board. It's a tough job, but it's the greatest job. And he's, you know, he elevates everybody who works with him, and he, like I said, he commands the best of you, and he brings out the best in you. So, and it was, you know, it was interesting going to do a film without him. I was really, really nervous and terrified, actually, and, you know, felt, oh God, I don't know that I can do this without him. Struggled for a little bit internally, but then you know Todd welcomed me with such open arms, and really, you know, I was very transparent with him about my I don't know if you've got the right person here, but he was lovely and really nurturing as well. So it was great. But no, Marty's the greatest teacher, the greatest friend. He's everything for me.
You know, I was very lucky to do a couple of Q&A's with you guys, and you know, I was kind of inside. I had like a fireworks display going on, you know, in terms of being sat next to him, but just hearing and feeling his enthusiasm for his craft and for his films, but his passion and as a film fan as well is just
it's infectious. Amazing. It's unbelievable. He's a complete encyclopedia. It's, you know, his the wealth of knowledge and love and passion is infectious and awe-inspiring.
Can we talk a little bit about Silence, because it was, I watched them. I love those Hollywood Reporter roundtables that you do, because you never get that opportunity to hear, you know, a collection of producers sit and talk about their work, their experience on a particular film. And so I kind of deep dive into those every year when they happen. I love them.
Oh, good.
But it was really interesting to hear you talk about Silence. And for you, it was so many things. You mentioned it being kind of almost proving yourself as a producer, but also that what it asked of you was enormous. It was a very different experience from what you'd done previously.
It was, you know, first of all, it took years and years and years to come together. When it did come together, you know, we had great financiers, but we had a finite amount of money. You know, we shot the film in Taiwan, by the way, one of the greatest places on earth to shoot. I keep hoping I'll end up back there again. I mean, just the most wonderful country and the most wonderful people, but challenging. You know, here we are making arguably one of the most important Japanese novels. We don't have it's all about, you know, you want to do right by the novel, you want to do right by, you know, the Japanese. We did not have the money to shoot in Japan. everything has to be as authentic as it can be. Yeah. We were bringing in Japanese background from Japan. We were bringing in Japanese artisans to work in all different departments. We had five different languages being spoken on set, which equals that many translators. Yeah. Rugged terrain, inclement, insane weather, earthquakes, you name it, and really a schedule and a budget that did not allow for anything but pushing through those elements. I've said it before, I was brought to my knees daily. I lost 30 pounds through sheer stress and anxiety. You know, I moved my family there for 8 months. It was the greatest experience. It was the hardest experience. I've never learned so much. I am so incredibly proud of that movie and Marty's work on that movie, and so incredibly proud to be a part of that movie. And I look back on that movie and I don't think that I'll ever produce or be a part of a film that's more close to my heart and more important to me than that film.
Wow. It's for us as film fans, it's such a physical experience watching it.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, and that's down to the whole atmosphere that has been created by Marty, and that score as well by Catherine and Kim.
Yeah.
It's kind of perfect. You can't imagine anything else being woven into
right
to that sort of story.
No, it's pretty special.
With that, did they come on board after it was shot, or were they, yeah, what point
they
were they?
Came on, yeah, I want to say they came on during. No, Kim is brilliant. I mean, that score is extraordinary and so quietly powerful.
Because it feels like, you know, when you listen to it, I was listening to it today, just the score, so you know, without the pictures and stuff,
right,
but you visualize everything.
Yeah.
You remember seeing, and you're also creating things that you maybe haven't seen through it, but it feels so woven into it that you go, God, it must have been written whilst they were there, whilst they were shooting it, because it's so
right
ingrained and
right
in all of it. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's really powerful.
Yeah.
That's the thing that Marty does well, whether it's his relationships with Howard Shore
yeah
on films, and Is music anything that you do get involved in at any point? You know, you would it be Howard Shore, or would it be helping facilitate those needle drop tracks and how he can access them? I mean, I interviewed Mick Jagger a few years back, yeah. And I kind of said to him, so surely, you know, Mr. Scorsese doesn't even need to ask for. He went, oh no, he still needs to ask.
Oh, he does. Oh yeah, because Mick doesn't control 99% of his stuff. Marty's knows the music as he's, yeah. You know, prepping his script. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, he really does. And he works very closely with Randall Poster, who's a music supervisor extraordinaire. He's just the greatest. Marty works very closely with Robbie Robertson, the greatest. Again, like I just sit back like the rest of us and cannot wait to see what needle drops and what, you know, I think I was like, God, I wonder what Robbie's going to get up to with Irishman. I am obsessed with his score in this film. I think it is so genius.
Yeah.
The harmonica. I love it. It's one of my favorite scores. No, I just make the deals, and I just make sure that
you do all the hard work.
I do, I do kind of that stuff, because you never want to go. You never want to say to Marty, "You can't have that." Sorry, you know. So Randy, you know, Randy, I work with Randy really closely, mm-hmm. and Kelly Cribbener post soup, and we make that all happen.
Yeah, I think Shutter Island's one of my favorite scores.
Fabulous
as well, in terms of the way that Max Richter tracks.
Oh, it's incredible.
And, yeah, it's very. Really special. I love that film so much.
Me too.
Oh my God. Yeah, I am. I was, not that I've been stalking you or anything, but you know, I kind of been looking and reading and stuff. And someone asked you about a film that you would take to Desert Island, and you said Mike Nichols' Silkwood.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that film? Because weirdly, one of my favourite films growing up was Day of the Dolphin, which I think I must have watched about 80 times as a kid. I mean, it's a random film, but I just loved that film so much. And I think he as a filmmaker is... He surprised you, I think, with everything that he did. He never wanted to be put in a box to be a certain type of filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
That I always felt like you'd be so excited to see what was next, because it was not that it was unexpected, but he never kind of laid back on his laurels to kind of keep producing
Mike.
The same type of thing.
Yeah, you know, I grew up, you know, in rural Connecticut. I actually grew up with Mike's son, Max, but that's not why Silkwood's you know, my dad would go to the movies a lot. We had one movie theater in our little town, and he would take me to all sorts of movies, appropriate or inappropriate. Yeah. And I can't remember what age I was, but I remember just watching that and the horror of, you know, what was going on in that story. The acting, of course, as everybody bowed down to Meryl Streep, I was absolutely blown away by that performance. Mm-hmm. Kurt Russell, Cher, I mean, just everything, but particularly the story. And I love, I you know, I'm drawn to, you know, true stories, mm-hmm. drama. I think Mike is a wonderful filmmaker, and his films are extremely accessible, mm-hmm. to all ages, and whether you think you're it doesn't interest you, it does, you know.
They're also kind of timeless universes.
They're timeless, yes. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a movie that I keep going back to, and I don't know why. I keep going back to that. I keep going back to Heartburn. I go back to, I don't know, I just go back to Mike a lot. And I just love that movie, Silkwood. I love Amazing Grace at the end. The shots of her getting the radiation baths, you know, I don't know. There's something that really, really struck me in that film that I just love. And I think you hit it on the head too. They are timeless films and they're accessible.
That, that Amazing Grace, that version of that is just... It's
unbelievable, heartbreaking.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears released. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed.
And then the George de la Rue score as well. And then Noah Baumbach cites, you know, George as being a composer, and Greta as well, that they kind of just cite as being huge inspirations to them as well. And it's wonderful that these kind of storytellers keep coming up in people's inspiration.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's really cool.
Let's talk Irishman, because this, I guess, similarly to Silence, when, you know, Mr. Scorsese has an idea of a film that he wants to make, he's going to make that film.
Absolutely.
You know, come hell or high water.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Silence was that. Irishman was that as well, yeah?
Absolutely.
How long has it been in the pipeline?
So Irishman's been in the pipeline about 12 years. You know, Silence definitely was priority number one. So we, you know, I mean, it's like, oh, it's been 12 years getting this movie made. I mean, we, you know.
You've been doing stuff.
First of all, yeah, exactly. I mean, everybody's schedules, you know, and we had to, Marty had to do Silence first. And then we said we were going to go right into this, which we did. So it's been a long time coming. Thank God for Netflix, I just want to say, because nobody was interested in making this movie.
I can't get my head around that Martin Scorsese can't get...
Martin Scorsese, Bob De Niro, Joe Pesci, and Al Pacino can't get this movie made. And they really couldn't in a traditional studio system. You know, I don't...
Why?
You know, exactly. I don't know. I don't... I probably should pay more attention to, you know, them running the numbers and what means that. I don't know the models that go into why people greenlight a movie and why they don't, but we literally could not get the film made. That being said, I think everything came together as it should, as they say, you know,
fate.
I think, yeah, that it was meant to be now for many reasons. But yeah, no, it was really Netflix who got us to the starting line. Ted Sarandos, Scott Stuber, best ever. Love them. Would do anything with them. They're the most supportive. And I don't just mean because they paid for the movie. They all of Netflix, you know, every department, just it's like a family, and you feel so supported across the board. There's no problem that can't be worked out. You know, it was never a scary phone call to the studio, or it was never a scary incoming phone call. You know, it was just always a conversation, and how can we work through whatever issue we were dealing with at any given time. But so thank you, Netflix.
Thank you.
So it took a while, and you know, the shoot was we had to also redevelop that technology. Thank God, mm-hmm. ILM and Pablo Hellman, the genius that they are, and that took some years.
It's like you say, sort of serendipity thing, where it's like, you know, the technology wasn't ready, so you can, you know, that it goes back, and then it finally catches up, and then it is all that thing that things slot in and they happen for a reason.
Yeah.
But in terms of the kind of scale of this film, which are the kind of the numbers, and I loved it when we did a Q&A, and I feel weird calling him Marty because I don't know him, and I feel like I should him.
You can call him Marty.
Can I? Thanks, yeah. Emma. but like, you know, that, he was like, how many days? Was it 109? You know, it was 108. And you kind of, you know, it's like, no, it was 108 shoot days. 117 locations and 319 scenes?
Exactly.
Holy crap.
Yes, exactly.
And that's you. That's you.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
you're running all that.
That's me and a tremendous team of people, Richard. Richard Barata, Carlo Reich, David Webb, unbelievable first assistant director. I know I have a team of remarkable, incredible people who make us get through those schedules and those locations and those days together. I lead the charge, yes, but not without them. Yeah, it was crazy. And I know those numbers so well because you literally are like, I still cannot believe it. You know, 317 scenes. I think we had 190 speaking roles. I'd have to double check that one. But yeah, no, it was, we were a massive footprint. We were making two, sometimes three moves a day, company moves a day. That's a lot. And you've got the guys who aren't spring chickens, but they're, you know, so you want to make sure, like, is this too much? You want to make sure that, you know, they're creative space is not being, you know, rushed along, and that they're not too exhausted. I mean, it's taxing. It's taxing shooting in New York for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and when you have to give those incredible performances and it was wild. It was wild.
Can you remember what the first day of shoot was like?
The first day of shooting we shot, it was sort of a light day. We shot the Italian American
sense of security.
Yeah, we shot over on Randall's Island. We shot the Italian American, what was Columbus Circle, the shooting. Oh my God, what is wrong with me? The Columbo shooting, and it was actually a very small area with a lot going on, and you know, everyone dressed period, and we had some stunts in the shooting, and it was probably the easiest day we had
of 108 days.
Yeah, of 108 days.
And then what is that feeling like when he calls, you know, cut, and that's the last day of shooting?
Oh,
your job's not done
on 108, but on day 108.
Yeah,
it's a sad moment for all. I'll tell you, even as hard as a job as it is, everybody on that set knows how profoundly lucky they are to be on that set. Nobody shoots a film the way Martin Scorsese shoots a film. It is a honor and a privilege to be on that set, and every single person from our, you know, set PAs to our electrics, to our key grips, to our camera operators, to our actors know that. And it's a sad moment when we picture wrap a film.
Does he ever play music on set?
Not really.
Yeah.
Marty has a very quiet, not that you can't play music on a set, but I mean, he just has a concentrated, quiet workspace.
Yeah. What do you love about your job? What do you love about producing?
I love making stuff happen. I love being able to facilitate, and I'm a caretaker by nature. You know, I'm a codependent, like, you know, mama bear freak like that. So I love to take care of people. I love to get things done. I love to make things happen. And I love a challenge, and making movies is challenging. I love prepping it all and seeing it all come together. And I love, if I don't love when things go wrong, but if something goes wrong and I'm able to, you know, I just get right in there and fix it and shield and protect my director from the insanity that is everyday filmmaking yeah. because it is really, really fucking hard to make a movie. So yeah. I enjoy the challenge. I love it. And I love the family atmosphere. I love the crew. You know, we're all one big family. We're all working together to, you know, make some beautiful and important art, I hope.
And I think that that's kind of, you know, you see how the film has been recognized in awards, and it's across all those different departments yeah. that are being recognized. And that's testament to, you know, to the ship that you guys man,
yeah.
you know, in terms of those people want to do the best they possibly can for you and Marty and make the best film they possibly yep. can. The fact that it's been awarded for, you know, everything, you know, from director to costumes,
oh, yeah.
set design to all that. It shows that every department is as important as the other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I certainly don't set out to make films for awards. However, it is such a nice bonus, and the recognition for both of these films has been above and beyond.
Yeah.
And I am so, so very proud of everybody who really put their blood, sweat, tears, hearts, everything into these films. Yeah, I'm so proud that everybody's been recognized. Yeah.
And congratulations as well. I mean, what Uncut Gems, what yeah. a film. Bloody oh, hell.
Those guys.
I discovered a new vein in my neck that I didn't know I had.
Hilarious. They're the greatest. Did you get to talk to them at all?
Not yet.
Oh, my
but
gosh.
But that's my lip. Oh, it's what a film.
Oh, what a film. What a film.
And
I know.
Right till the, you know, the
no,
very
right till
last
the end.
Frame.
No.
You, oh.
No. The first time I saw the movie finished, like with everything.
Yeah.
I went to a Dolby, they were doing a, you know, they were screening it at Dolby, and they were going to do a Q&A after with the sound mixers. And Josh was like, you got to come, Emma. I mean, it's 9:30 in the morning, but you got to come. And I was like, oh, he's God. Like, 'cause the sound, you're never going to hear it like this again, you know? So I was like, all right, I'm coming. I was like, wow. I mean, I know the script well. I had seen it before, but sitting there listening, I mean, just start to finish, I was like a basket case after, because you just can't. But it's brilliant. Adam Sandler, what a performance.
Oh my God.
Holy cow.
And to think that he wasn't going to do it for a minute. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of crazy.
Crazy. He is an extraordinary actor. I hope we see him in more roles like this. Yeah, no, those guys are fabulous. Marty
yeah.
and I had a small part in that, but you know, just love to champion and support. Yeah.
Being an exec producer on something
yeah.
like that, then what does that mean that you kind of...
So we, you know, we'd been involved for a long time. I think
yeah.
it was like 4 or 5 years, certainly before they had shot Good Time. So, you know, really just anything from, you know, Marty, more the creative stuff, looking at scripts, looking at cuts. I helped, you know, this was the first time they shot in New York as a union film. So they needed a little bit of guidance there.
Yeah.
So I jumped in wherever I could help, because through working with Marty for so long, you know, we're very well respected and loved in New York City. And so I jumped in wherever I could help them with you know, production issues
yeah.
or whatever. But we were just really there to help and support,
yeah.
and, you know, Marty lending his name and his creative touches where need be, you know, we just want to nurture and promote and help, you know, young filmmakers.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
And young, I don't mean by young in age. I mean young in their career.
Yeah,
they could
absolutely.
Be young, or they could be older, or whatever.
Yes. I mean, I'm excited to see what the Safdie brothers do next.
Oh,
it's kind
me
of,
too.
And Daniel's score for that as well is great. And then similar with The Souvenir.
Oh,
my God, what a...
Unbelievable.
Is The Souvenir part two?
Two, I can't wait. Yes.
Oh, my God.
I know.
This is great news.
I saw her at London Film Critics the other night, Joanna. Which one? I love it. Best
yeah.
British film.
Film yeah.
And she's coming along, cutting away. I can't wait to see it.
Oh, great.
What, she's so fabulous. She's so fabulous.
So you've got like quite a lot of different little things on the go then at the minute.
Yeah.
I was hoping you might get a holiday after this awards.
I am
after
gonna,
Oscars.
I am.
Good.
Oscars are February 9th. My husband and I are flying away on February 10th to a location far, far away where I'm just going to take 6 days and really...
6 days.
I'm going to take 6 days. I have two kids.
Yes,
I have two kids who haven't seen me, you know, and it feels like years. No, and then we go, we're actively prepping Killers of the Flower Moon, which then I go to Oklahoma and shoot that for 8 months or something.
De Niro and Leo.
De Niro and Leo. Back with Leo.
Can't wait.
My boy, I love him. So excited.
I rewatched Wolf of Wall Street recently. Jesus
Christ. Oh, yeah, what a film, he's unbelievable. Yeah.
What a film.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I could talk to you for days, but we've actually got a Q&A to go
to. I know. Edith, this is so awesome. Thank you.
And let's do it again. And listen, I wish you all the luck in the world for this weekend, next weekend. But I'm just so excited about what's next as
Thank
well.
You. Thanks, You've been Emma. So wonderful throughout this whole time, really, and the Q&As. And I'm so excited that you're doing it tonight.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for having me.
From the score to Uncut Gems, that's Pure Elation by Daniel Lopatin. Rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with the fabulous Emma Tillinger-Koskoff. And also, if you haven't seen Uncut Gems yet, you need to rectify that now. My huge thanks to Emma for taking the time to talk to us. Both The Irishman and Uncut Gems are available to watch now on Netflix, with Joker and The Souvenir available on home entertainment formats. Now, if you want to listen to my chats with Todd Phillips and Hilda Goodenough here, head to edithbowman.com, which is also the place that you can subscribe to this podcast. Please do follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and do keep spreading the word if you do like what you hear. Next up, it is an absolute joy to welcome back the fabulous Todd Haynes, talking about his latest film, Dark Waters, which stars Mark Ruffalo, and is a film that really gets under your skin and gets you thinking. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.